Hello, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar. I'm Nancy Stone with RealCom, and we're pleased to be kicking off our new hybrid workplace series with part one, occupancy analytics and the flexible hybrid workplace. We have a great panel who'll be discussing tools and strategies for a data-driven, flexible hybrid workplace design. Before we get started, let's review a few housekeeping items. First, please use the Q&A box on the bottom right of your screen to submit questions or comments. We'll try to get to them during the session, or we'll follow up with you after if we run short. For the best webinar experience, we suggest you close any other internet applications you might be running. If you have any technical issues during the session, please contact me at nstone@realcom.com. And lastly, this webinar is being recorded, and a link to the recording will be sent to all registrants. We'd like to thank today's gold sponsors, ABB, Innerspace, Join, and Yardi. We'll hear more about these companies during the session. We'd also like to thank our silver sponsors, Locatee and iOffice. Let's watch a quick message from each before we get started.
Locatee's analytics platform helps corporate real estate managers to understand their portfolios by using data. They can answer important questions like how to downsize a portfolio to save costs, when to terminate leases, if they're expanding, to determine the right size for new acquisitions, how to reconfigure existing spaces, and how to stay safely within occupancy levels. Locatee is launching in the US in order to help corporate real estate managers make decisions confidently, with accurate analytics, and with the most relevant data. And there's no additional hardware costs, so we can get started right away.
All workplaces are changing. Whether your workplace is a factory, a healthcare center, the cab of a semi-truck, or an office, you need to manage infrastructure, keep your machinery running, your employees connected, and your spaces safe, all with your eye on the bottom line. With smarter tools that keep pace with your shifting priorities, you can make better business decisions, streamline operations, and make workspaces people want to work in. iOffice has expanded our family of cloud-based software, so you have enterprise solutions that grow with you. We're helping you connect workplace experience and asset management to create a more agile environment for employees and better outcomes for the world.
Today's webinar will be moderated by Pei Wu, Executive Managing Director at Cushman & Wakefield. Pei leads the global occupier outsourcing business in the East region across strategic, advisory, transaction management, facilities management, and project management services. She is a CRE advisor and executive with over 25 years of industry and consulting experience, managing teams to produce positive P&L results. Pei, welcome, and thanks for moderating today's panel.
Thank you, Nancy. It is my pleasure to facilitate today's session, and we have a great lineup of corporate and sponsor speakers today. In Q1 of 2020, seemingly overnight, actually, if I could get some help to advance the slide, because there you go. Seemingly overnight, work and life went virtual. And some interesting stats, not only a lot of work, school, and interaction went video-based, we also know from social media that a lot of time was spent on platforms. Most astounding fact is that Instagram and Twitter doubled their numbers of scrolls and tweets last year for every minute that was a year-on-year increase. And the stats that was tracked by Zoom alone was in excess of 300 million users Along with many of the other platforms like Google Meet, BlueJeans, and Teams, we know that over 500 million of you were online on a daily basis. Now, having gone through a year's of this experience, we also know that based on the research that we have done at Cushman & Wakefield, that work from home experience were better than expected. However, we are seeing some deterioration and generational differences. We also know that from experience per square foot survey, that productivity was maintained, but collaboration and belonging was really compromised. And ultimately, place does matter for culture building. We know that at the end of the day, people come into buildings to collaborate, to learn, to coach, and also to collaborate for innovation purposes. Now, as we start to kind of look at the data that we're tracking globally amongst our client businesses, as well as publicly available information, we are starting to see that the last two quarters, companies are going through an envisioning process to really create an understanding of what the return to site and return to office might look like. We are looking at how to change up the spaces, the investment that's needed, and ultimately how to create a safe but pleasant return to office experience. And the diversity of return to office in terms of the numbers of days that are expected varies by geography in different parts of the world, and also by sector, with many that are sort of tied to site or tied to manufacturing and supply chain coming back first. As we kind of start to look at the data that is generated out of this whole experience in the last year, what we do know is that from a corporate journey perspective, the picture is not clear yet. With nearly 3 billion workers globally, and just 180 million or so in the US alone, or North America alone, we know that there are many companies that have grappled with people, process, strategy, technology challenges, and also in terms of work and place, trying to define what that looks like, both for the short term as well as the long term. The digitizing of business has accelerated. And right now the conversation really is in three parts around remote, around flex, including some of the discussions around co-working. And then what does that hybrid experience look like? And our speakers today are going to present both an end user perspective as well as based on the product experience that is out there. What we'd like to do is feature some of the not only trends and themes, but really at the end of the day, how do we know what the new world looks like in terms of measuring for success? And so as a jump off point for the conversation, I have put together a number of buckets and each one of our speakers will touch on some of these buckets in various formats. And hopefully as part of the dialogue that will happen over the next hour or so, that we will be able to address some of the ways that apps and tools and ideas that are being considered across corporate America right now, that we're able to sort of offer up some thought for consideration as you are considering the way that you're gonna return. And so with that, I'd like to introduce our first speaker. We have Olivia Millar. Olivia is the advisor to the division chief of the IMF. As the architect and master space planner for the IMF, Olivia is responsible for how the fund uses and maximizes the 3 million square feet that is headquartered in downtown Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Pei. Pei really highlights and at the highest level the conversations that we're having. If we could just slide to the next slide at the fund, we own 2 billion for totaling just under 3 million square feet. And it's traditional space, generally speaking. So the idea that we're looking at something hybrid really could be a very, quite a radical departure for us. So we're very deliberate in the way we're looking at this. You know, we really want it to be a data-driven decision. We're asking ourselves the questions here, similar to what Pei had mentioned and similar to what I'm sure a lot of people are asking themselves, what does this look like? How many people will be in the building? How do we deal with peak times? What kinds of spaces do we need to support a hybrid workforce? How big are those spaces? What will bring people back to campus? What will make the culture worth it, what will support the culture, but also make the commute worth it to see people and to collaborate. And then, so all of these things, we don't really have the answer yet. We suspect, we have really strong hypotheses, but what we want to do is take an iterative approach to the way we move forward into this new work environment, and be quite deliberate about it. And so what we are currently looking at is how do we collect that data? What tools do we need to track, and how are we going to use it? And you know, we've had questions around occupancy rates for a while, but now in light of the last 13, 14 months, what we're asking for has grown in terms of the data collection points. So if we actually flip to the next slide, we've had some systems in place to collect data in the past, and it was a first step for us. And what we found is that we really weren't getting enough data points and the level of detail to answer today's questions. So we're now stepping back from what had been a space question and putting a more broad brush on this, and what other data points do we need? So looking at really much more robust smart building system. This would include things like cleaning and humidity, temperature, and it's now not just a data resource for us in space to project forward what we need to continue to evolve our physical infrastructure, but it's also, we're looking for a tool that we can help all of our staff, all of our occupants understand what we're doing, feel good about where we are, and really have some sense of ownership over the physical infrastructure and how it supports them, and really feed into very transparent information exchange. So I guess just to the last slide here to talk about some of our challenges, you know, we're not there yet. This is early for us. These are the questions we're asking. We are really trying to be deliberate, be data-driven. We have some issues, some concerns. We have some privacy concerns. You know, everybody's also having kind of contact tracing questions, which somewhat feeds into this as well. And how do we protect people's privacy is very important to us. Rolling into the big system means we have to ask ourselves a lot more questions. What data points do we want to collect, and how are we going to use them? And so it's a bigger, broader conversation. And then physically, we have two buildings of different ages, and we've just refurbished one, and it has newer infrastructure than the other one, and what is possible from a technology perspective. These are all things that we're asking ourselves right now. So that's kind of a broad brush as an end user, owner, operator, downtown, where we are in our process.
That's great. Thank you, Olivia. And knowing that many of the questions that you have posed, you know, are similar questions that we're hearing across corporate America, one of the things that I'd love to kind of get your perspective around in trying to get questions answered, how do you expect your partners to sort of work on that with you? What do you expect, you know, of your vendors from the standpoint of the data and occupancy analytics that you would need to be able to plan for return to office?
Yeah, I mean, we really view these as partnerships. We're really getting into this without a whole lot of history. So we would be relying on partners to help us determine what it is we are gonna do with the data. And so, you know, it would be terrible to not collect enough data, but it would also just be just as bad to collect too much data and we can't make head or tail of it. So I think we're looking for guidelines and for them to bring their experience with other groups to us to bear on what the decisions we're making and help us define these things in a way that will be useful for us going forward.
That's great. So what we will do is, you know, we have a number of segment of presentations, and so we will invite Olivia back at the end to be part of a dialogue. And so with that, I'd like to introduce our next speaker. So our next speaker is Stuart Gray. He is the Senior VP Strategy, Transformation, and Analytics for Wells Fargo. Stuart leads the Corporate Properties Business Strategy, Transformation, and Analytics team and is responsible for managing a pipeline of cross-functional initiatives focused on business transformation and technology enablement, operational leadership of business management and corporate real estate data analytics functions. And Stuart, you're going to share with us a bit on what you're doing with your platform.
Yeah, good morning, Pei. Thank you for having me. So I'm here today to talk about, from an end user perspective, how is Wells Fargo approaching the hybrid workplace, and then how, a little bit about how we're looking at occupancy analytics. So Wells Fargo has been working on this hybrid workplace journey for a few years now. We've branded our hybrid workplace neighborhood design, as you'll see. So I'm going to talk today, I'll give you some visuals of a flagship location in South Brevard in Charlotte. We opened February last year, right before the pandemic. We just started moving folks in, and then it's pretty much been mothballed for a year. We have 3,000 unassigned seats in that building, and just waiting for us to return to the office. Oops, jumped ahead too far. So just quickly here on this slide, this is, you know, when we look at our neighborhood design model at Wells Fargo, the factors driving how we think about the hybrid workplace are really twofold. On the left-hand side, you can see what are the industry and competitive pressures we're seeing out there? What do we need to respond to stay competitive in the market, for make sure we're attracting great talent and retaining them? On the right side, employee expectations. So from a design perspective, when we build out that space, what are we focused on? What are the key elements that we see in the hybrid workplace? And that's really choice, flexibility and choice, individual choice into how to work, how to collaborate, providing a variety of spaces, making sure we welcome people back into the buildings. And particularly as we return to office, that's going to be a huge component of that. Folks have been working remotely for over a year. How do we make that welcome back to the office experience fantastic and enjoyable for everyone? And how do we make it simple and easy for folks to work in that hybrid workplace? We've had people working remotely for over a year now. Many of those folks have never worked remotely previously. Many have come to like it too. At the same time, people miss the office and they want to get back. So we don't know what the future is going to look like when we return to office, but we're planning and trying to build flexibility into our portfolio. So as we bring people back, we can adapt and respond quickly. Whoops, jumped ahead too far there. So quickly, just some high-level metrics about Wells Fargo. Domestically, we're about 41 million square feet right now, around 500 office buildings. So that's leading out our branch network, customer-facing stuff. As I said, we were already pretty flexible pre-pandemic with 55,000 people working remotely. Now it's 200,000. We don't know what it's going to look like when we come back, right? It's going to likely be somewhere in between there. We're figuring it out. There will likely be more consistency, more flexibility across the board. So we're trying to design our real estate strategy, our analytics strategy to accommodate that. So quickly, just diving into some of the space design elements here. Neighborhood design, the way we're approaching that is we have these work floors in the building. So using South Brevard, we'll put 4 to 6 neighborhoods on each floor, 100% unassigned seating, and a variety of seating choices in those neighborhoods. We also go heavy on building amenities, both at a floor level and entire floor of meeting, conference room, game rooms, you know, employee experience elements available to everyone in the building. Again, the goals are around promoting choice for employees, providing a variety of options, and enhanced amenities. How do we make that workplace experience great, welcome people back into the office, and make the office a destination where our employees want to come to collaborate, because they can work more effectively, be more productive. Here's some more visuals. One thing I'll highlight down the bottom left, you'll see what we call a front porch. So this is a concept each neighborhood, as I mentioned, we have 4 to 6 neighborhoods, there's a front porch. We put video collaboration everywhere in this space. So you can, using Cisco equipment, you can collaborate in with other buildings, people at home on Zoom or Skype, and really have that hybrid workplace to bring together the folks in the office in that meeting room experience with remote workers in other locations or those working flexibly from home. Last visual here, this is kind of visual of the work seats, right? So the neighborhoods, you know, you'll see 120s there, bench seats, variety of spaces spread out. We'll have cubicles, some hardware or offices, focus rooms where folks can go into if they need to take a phone call, have quiet time. It's really around choice and standard kit of parts, right? Standard technology on every workstation. You can drop and move to any desk. If we start to get too crowded, you know, one group starts hiring too many people or hiring more people and the space fills up, we can just restack them to the next floor. They just need to grab their belongings out of the locker and move to the next floor. It really simplifies our moving and restacking within the portfolio. Touching on the analytics, we think about, we've got a very diverse portfolio. The key message for us is it's not a one-size-fits-all approach to utilization or analytics. It really depends on a number of factors, our real estate strategy and our employee segmentation, right? What's happening in that market? How many seats do we have? In some markets, we've got a sea of seats and not that many people, declining population. Others, we have other pressures, like Charlotte, where we've got rapid growth, plenty of seats, but trying to fit more people into fewer seats. So the strategy varies and the level of detail we want to get to with our utilization varies based on that portfolio. We also have functions, specialty functions like operation centers, customer facing, where it's just different, right? The way they work are different. They have physical document flows. They're interacting with customers. So we're not looking to apply the same approach. We're trying to be very strategic with how we deploy our utilization technologies across the portfolio. And finally, I just want to wrap up with kind of how we're thinking about the analytics. So we've been on this journey for a while now, lots of different data sources for analytics. It seems everyone has a utilization measurement solution these days, lots of vendors in the space. So we're starting with a platform first approach. And really what we're looking is we get a richer picture of utilization by pulling together all these data sources, badge data, login, lighting, occupancy sensors. And by pulling that into a common platform, we then have two components to it. One is a traditional how we're using the space and adapting the space to meet the demands of how it's being used, right? Understand how people are using the space. Do we need smaller, larger conference rooms, more conference rooms, less work seats, whatever that looks like. The second one you'll see on the left down the bottom here, mobile app and kiosk, we want to start to promote change in behavior and actually driving behaviors, leveraging that analytics in a near real-time basis. So let's go back to the smart parking garage model where you have a number of available parking spaces on each floor. This gives us a similar concept for seats, for conference rooms, right? How do we drive behaviors, push that data to our employees so they can be informed and work in a way that's more productive, more collaborative for them, find the space that meets their needs and their choice. So thank you, Pei. That's last slide for me. Any questions you have?
Yeah, a great framework and presentation. So as you were covering the platform analytics, can you talk a little bit about the business case or how you proved out the return on investment in terms of all the things that you tied together? How did you go about helping the business kind of knit that together?
Yeah, I mean, that's been a multi-year journey. It's always challenging. One thing we did was we took a total cost of ownership approach, right? So there, when you look at, there's a variety of technologies out there, seat sensors, WLAN triangulation, login badge. So what we were trying to do is look at total cost of ownership, right? So putting sensors everywhere in 45 million square feet, you start talking hundreds of thousands to millions of battery operated sensors to track utilization. So when you think of that over a 5-year period, if you take a sensor only approach, it gets very expensive to replace batteries, have people go around and maintain those, even on a less than 1% failure rate, you're still talking of thousands of sensors you need to rip and replace. So our approach is how do we look at the space and what is the level of granularity we need for each space type? So if you think about like a large conference room which holds 12 to 20 people, we want people counting technology, understand how that's being used. If we're talking a focus room or a huddle room with, that supports one or two people, we just need to know, is it in use or not? So our goal is to leverage what we have in place with things like lighting sensors that are already there and tell us that. Batch data, login data can tell us how many people are on the floor. Wi-Fi triangulation, we already have the WAFs in place. So, you know, from a long-term maintenance point of view, that's easier. And then, you know, we can supplement that for specific spaces, collaborative space, and open collaboration areas, meeting centers, with sensors to give that complete picture of what we're trying to achieve. And from an ROI perspective, it's really translating that into seat saved and square footage reduction, right? So if we go to a 1.3 or a 1.4 to 1 ratio, right, we can put hard dollars to that by market, by city. So that's really how we're approaching it.
Oh, that's great stuff. Thank you. So up next, we have a short video from Yardi before we introduce Brian Sutherland.
Commercial real estate is changing, and Yardi has the right technology to power your strategy. Turn vacancy back into revenue with Yardi Cube, the award-winning solution that helps build a thriving co-working community. Improve energy operations with Yardi Pulse, the energy performance platform that helps you operate your buildings from anywhere. Drive asset performance with Yardi Elevate, the technology suite that connects every aspect of real estate operations. Yardi, energized for tomorrow.
All right. So now I would like to introduce Brian Sutherland. Brian is the VP for Yardi. He is currently the industry principal for Yardi Elevate, the asset management suite within the Yardi collection of real estate management solutions. Before joining Yardi, he spent 15 years as a founder and president for several startup companies. And Brian is going to actually tell us the Yardi return to site or office story. Nice to see you, Brian.
Yeah, nice seeing you as well. Thank you, Pei. So gonna present today, not from the context of a software provider, but more for the from the context of an employee, as well as an organization, Yardi, and being a corporate real estate occupier. In terms of being an employee and managing a team, there's kind of three things that I think about being key to the return from home office to return to our regular office. And that's a culture, collaboration, and coaching. And certainly those elements are key and something that I think that generally we've missed by and large working from home. And so certainly looking forward to the transition, moving back into the office and having that culture, the collaboration, and the coaching opportunity. In terms of Yardi as an organization, thought I would just share a little bit in terms of a case study of Yardi and kind of the challenges that we're faced with. For those folks that aren't familiar with Yardi, our footprint is about 7,500 employees, 45 offices and global offices, which has made the return to office conversation much broader and I think much more challenging. And then in terms of the space we occupy, about 2 million square feet of lease space that we have across the 45 offices. I talked about the three C's. I was putting together some notes before the call and narrowed down the challenge that we're having as an organization really to the three S's. So the first one would be employee schedules and really looking at transitioning now almost 7,500 employees from work from home back into the office and what sort of schedules we're thinking about. So we've been talking about, you know, 2-2-3 or 3-2 type of schedules, flexibility within teams on those schedules, and then of course it being an optional schedule as well. The second S I was going to talk about was safety. The need to screen incoming employees potentially for health and safety reasons. And then also looking at safety in terms of vaccines and what is our position as an organization in terms of office reentry. Should vaccines be mandatory or not? And I know a lot of other organizations have made statements as it pertains to that. Nothing that we have done thus yet, but something that's certainly top of mind. The third S that I was going to talk about is space. And really, when I say space, what physical space is going to look like. what sort of capital we're going to have to put in to our current office footprints as far as private office, as far as hot desk or cube configurations, safety screens, et cetera, and really looking at how space is physically occupied. I think of all of the conversations that we had, I think the biggest challenge was how space is really going to be utilized and how are we going to manage the cube configurations and really get visibility into that. So we've created just a mobile app internally for our employees. Because this pandemic has taken some time, we started work on this back in October. And now Sydney has opened and other offices are going to start to slowly open at Yardi. And really three things that our internal app's going to do. One is going to connect our employees so we can really connect with teams that we might be working with or other coworkers that you might want to be in office on the same day with, that type of thing. So an internal tool for that. From a booking standpoint, to be able to look at the various floors, select if you don't have a private office, what location you would want to go into, how many days a week, and who is in those spaces next to you, so you can make sure that you're orienting yourself with folks that you can work with, that you can connect with. And finally, the third element is health and safety. And so I think those are kind of the three fundamentals as far as what we're thinking about getting the employees back in. You know, it's connection, it's booking the space, it's health and safety. And then really working for on a tool for the various office managers that we have at Yardi, the HR departments, to really help manage the employees, manage the physical space, and get visibility into who's coming into the properties. So that's what I was going to share today. Again, my perspective and the Yardi perspective from an occupier standpoint.
That's great. And it's nice to see, Yardi sort of deploying the apps and enabling some of the processes that we're all grappling with. So, Brian, in your business, you deal with both sides of the fence, so both landlords and tenants. So what do you think has evolved between that relationship? What advice do you have for the landlords? How about we just focus on the landlord over the next sort of 3 to 6 months?
Yeah, I know it's interesting. I think that the one theme that has come out of this is knowing your tenants. And so if you look at the traditional tenant landlord relationship, it was often during lease negotiations, paying monthly rent, et cetera. And I think the need to really go, investors are asking new questions. Landlords need to understand who the tenants are, what their needs are, what they're thinking about in terms of office reentry, how space is going to be used, what amenities they're going to expect. And then I think it goes even a layer deeper than the tenants themselves to the tenant employees, really, and looking at what they're thinking about and what challenges they're having when it comes to office reentry in this example. And so I think that transparency between all of those layers, investors and landlords, tenants and employees, is certainly critical.
Yeah, no, we see that as well, sort of serving both sides of the fence. And I think there's definitely much more collaboration and dialogue than there has ever been. So that's great. Well, thank you so much for, telling us the Yardi story.
Of course.
So up next, we have James Wu, who is the CEO of InnerSpace. InnerSpace is a company that's focused on developing indoor tracking smart office solutions. And James, thank you for making this presentation.
Thanks for having me. As Pei was saying, InnerSpace is a platform that collects occupancy, utilization, and behavioral data for the kinds of clients that have just been speaking. So while they presented a kind of a client and user tenant perspective, I'm going to present a bit of a meta view and talk about, obviously, what are we saying to our customers, but also what are we hearing from our customers, and provide more of an aggregate feedback on them on this perspective. So, I can't control it. So, if someone could advance the slide, that would be great. Perfect. So, Mark Twain had famously been misquoted as, the rumor of my demise has been greatly exaggerated. And I think if the corporate workplace could could speak, this is kind of what it would be saying to us today at the beginning of this pandemic. And you know, at the same time, the beginning of this forced global experiment in mass remote work, there were all kinds of these really hyperbolic reports from companies like Google and others, and talking about how they were never planning to bring their employees back. And while the timelines continue to shift as you know subsequent waves of this pandemic hit and the complexities of this mass vaccination program were taking their toll, what became really clear is that the office itself isn't dead. And you're hearing this from the previous speakers. What is dead is the way in which we used to use the office. Next slide, please. Because you know, after all of these knee-jerk responses and after a bit of a cooling off period when everyone adjusted to this all remote workforce, people started to think a little bit more rationally about the future, and they kind of realized that there was a really stark choice in front of them that they were going to have to make. So option A was that they could do nothing and they could wait out the current situation and you know plan to go back to the way things were after the pandemic. But what we're hearing from most of our customers is that when they polled their employee base, anywhere between 40 and 70% of them were saying they never wanted to go back full time ever. You know, they did not want to go back to the way it was. And you know, moreover, the leadership at the same time was recognizing that their operations had continued in spite of this unprecedented level of remote work. And so they were beginning to question, why would they bear the financial burden of all of that square feet of their office if they didn't need to? On the flip side, they could choose, you know, what was behind door number two, and they could stay remote. But what's behind that door is this complete unknown risk about the long-term impact to the culture of their company, the long-term impact to loyalty and retention of their employees. And you know, most importantly, the long-term impact to things like productivity and collaboration and innovation. You know, many of our customers are telling us that while productivity was really strong in the early days of the pandemic, as it has dragged on, they've seen it kind of wane. So the remaining option for them to think about was to rethink how their workplace would operate beyond the pandemic, to think about how could they disrupt the old paradigm and establish a new model for how that workplace was going to serve the employees who used it. And you know, many of our most forward-thinking customers were already working on this before the pandemic. So they saw this future of a dynamic office that could, you know, vastly exceed the old expectations of, you know, what compression targets in terms of employees per square foot or desks per employee could be, by leveraging a significantly remote workforce and maintaining a significantly reduced facility footprint, and sort of reserve the office for, you know, in-person activities that necessitated it. So most of our clients, as you're hearing from the previous speakers, the previous speakers have a pretty good perspective on what it is, you know, they think it's going to look like. A lot of our clients aren't quite there yet, but what they know is that the analytics, that they're going to need analytics to figure it out. And importantly, they're going to need real-time data in order to operate it effectively. Next slide, please. They also know that there's a whole lot more to it than just counting people, just counting occupancy, right? Occupancy data is considered kind of a table stake to facilitate this safe return to the workplace, and it gets a lot of airtime. But ultimately, occupancy is just this single measurement, and it lacks a lot of the depth needed to derive really meaningful insights about how a space is functioning. To truly understand how a workplace is being used by the different groups of people that occupy it, our customers are recognizing that they need to layer in additional sources of information that can, you know, tell them things about movement through a space, that can, you know, glean different demographic data about, you know, and differentiate between different teams. How does the sales team use the space versus the engineering team versus the legal team? And they're also recognizing the need for much finer grained resolution for large open neighborhood style spaces that are really common in today's corporate space. So you know, these are all sort of aspects of the data that are, you know, beyond the realm of, you know, traditional occupancy sensors or occupancy data alone. The last thing is that they're also recognizing that the need to be cost effective. And somebody mentioned, one of the previous speakers mentioned that blanketing every square feet of space with occupancy sensors isn't always a viable option if you're operating, you know, 40 million square feet or 20 million square feet, even hundreds of thousands of square feet, right? Next slide, please. So figuring out what this disruptive model for the workplace will be isn't a one and done activity, right? It's an iterative process of observation, followed by experimentation, followed by, you know, action, implementation or improvement, right? So a two-week study that just, you know, counts people in their chairs or counts people in a meeting room isn't really going to cut it. What happens in February doesn't necessarily apply in August, and what happens, you know, on the third floor with the legal team isn't necessarily applicable to the way the engineers use their space. So what's needed is this always-on solution that can support continuous improvement in a virtuous cycle, right? So the first part of this cycle is understanding behavior, because space utilization is really about how people choose to use the space they have. Workplace analytics data can be used not only just to, you know, to inform actions that, you know, administrators and workplace strategists can take, but it can also be used to influence how people choose to use the resources that they have. And you can help people make better decisions on a daily basis that can improve their productivity and also improve the utilization of the existing space or design. So examples of this are mobile apps or digital signage that help people know where they can find, you know, their colleagues, or know where they can find available desks or available, you know, touchdown workspaces. The second part is implementing data-driven design changes, right? So the choices that people make are influenced by the options that they have. So if you change the design of the space, you change the options that they have and the choices that they can make, and you influence the behavior. The last piece of this cycle is automation, right? Automating through integration with building systems that ultimately control the operation and management of space resources. So automated processes that are based on real-time workplace analytics data can improve things like building efficiency, so you can, you know, be greener. They can improve occupant comfort and generally the overall utilization of your space. And all of those things in turn influence people's behavior and you go around once more. So an example of, you know, very simple automation would be integration with you know, room reservation systems or desk reservation systems that can do something as simple as release unoccupied rooms and return more of that room supply to the system, so that people who are looking for resources can find more of them, and you know, it influences their choices and influences their behaviors. Next slide, please. Sorry, I get the sense that I'm being rushed. I do want to end very quickly just with an example, right? So there is a real ROI in investing in this kind of data. Real estate is not cheap, and underutilizing what you have isn't just a sunk cost. So it can mean spending millions of dollars more on new footprint if you don't need it. So, you know, we've worked with clients and helped them do things as simple as find space to house 100 new employees that they were hiring, without having to lease more space. And in expensive locations like San Francisco, you know, that can mean a savings of $1.5 million in annual leasing costs. Sorry, Kate, that took a little longer than expected. Back to you.
No, it was a great overview and what a case study. One quick question that I had for you, when we start to kind of look at the occupancy data, and you have a lot of different slices of that data that I think is really interesting, right? Do you view that to be like an ongoing capability that, you know, companies are going to have to bake in for the longer term? Like, you know, if people counting is like an ongoing process and occupancy data and insights is an ongoing process, like, what are your thoughts around the longer term?
Yeah, I think occupancy, as I was saying, occupancy is sort of the table stake for that safe return and the people, everybody's focused on how do I get my people back? And occupancy is key to that, right? And it's key to that safety piece. But occupancy alone doesn't really provide that long-term ROI because there's only so much depth to that data, right? You can't differentiate with occupancy data alone the different demographics of people in the space and how they're using it. And you can't really use that to gather or to get the insights that you need to really make changes to the space and improve the overall efficiency and effectiveness of your space. So occupancy is, the relevance of occupancy is high in the short term and kind of diminishes long term. The relevance of the behavioral data, the movement, the flow, the trend data is possibly lower in the short term, but is augmented long term. And it's probably long term the aspect of data with the most ROI.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. I'm sure that we could debate this at length, especially on the ROI front as well. So let's perhaps circle back on the, at the end of the session and make sure that we touch on that again if we have the time. So thank you, James. Next, we've got Travis Perkin, the VP of Customer Experience from Join. And before we have him make his presentation, we'll just pause for a short video.
You are taking care in multiple ways to protect your community and yourself from COVID-19. Yet because we're all in this together, thank you. You expect to be able to continue to do this when you return to your workplace. The office elevators have stickers to limit crowding. You understand that distancing reduces overall capacity of your building's elevators, but you are not alone if you're wondering, how will I avoid overcrowding in the elevator lobbies? Or will I have to wait in a really long line? What if your office building was working with you on this? Up next by Join on your smartphone is your partner to help you and everyone in your office maintain safe distancing when waiting for elevator rides, both up and down. You can make a reservation, and Up Next will tell you when it's time to head toward the lobby and when it's your turn to ride. You can also ride standby, and Up Next provides brightly colored passes so you can easily coordinate with your coworkers on whose turn it is. Up Next includes helpful countdowns for when you need to wait a moment. So go ahead and install Up Next and elevate trust. Learn more about innovations from Join at joindigital.com.
All right. Love those avatars. So Travis is the head of customer experience for Join Digital. He and his team focus on delivering new and innovative experiences in CRE owner, operator, and their tenants. Travis has 12 plus years in customer experience working for a wide range of tech companies in the cybersecurity and real estate verticals. Travis?
Awesome. Thanks so much, Pei. And thank you to all the attendees that are taking time out of your day to learn a little bit more about what us at Join, as well as the other panelists here, are talking about. And just to sort of kick it off here, I'll be taking sort of a couple of different views of occupancy analytics and really kind of what it means through the lens of both owners and operators, but also into tenant spaces as well. And I'll really kind of kick it off initially with understanding what the imperatives are for the owners today. So today it's really about rebuilding occupancy, right? So it's about 60 people showing up in my building when I can handle 3,500 or 4,000 people. And so the reality is today we're competing with the home, we're competing with maybe the park, we're competing with a lot of different areas in terms of optionality that employees have to work. And so how do you create not only spaces that they want to come back to, but they want to continue to come back to? And this is really around the lens of lasting technology. So today it's really about rebuilding occupancy, and that's kind of about drawing tenants back to the office. So how do you elevate trust with those individual workers that are coming in on a daily basis? And so much of that, as some of the other panelists were alluding to, is not only just collecting the data, but also democratizing it and pushing it down to the individual knowledge workers that are coming into those spaces as well. We know that the CRE market in general has definitely taken a hit, especially here in San Francisco, where subleases are way up. And so it's really about how do you win new tenants as well. And so how do you differentiate your property, not just based on location, but based on the amenities, the digital amenities that you have throughout the space. And so not only is it about, again, understanding flow through a space or collecting indoor air quality, so much of that is about elevating that and sharing that with the individual workers, the individual tenants that are coming into that space. And so it's about differentiating. And then of course, it's about maximizing your revenue per square foot. As we heard previously, how is your lobby being used? How is your conference space being used or your fitness center? All of these things that you're making large capital investments in, are they actually being utilized and how are they being utilized? So that context to what's actually happening in those spaces is absolutely imperative. And that really starts with, again, laying down a technology foundation, if you will, that you can then build and iterate on over time. And I'll touch on how companies, both tenants and CRE owner operators can get to that. So not only is it about today elevating trust, bringing people back into the office, but it's also about creating realistically, you know, sort of technologies that are lasting, experiences that are lasting. It's one thing to invest $1 million for something that might just get you through the next 6 months. It's another thing to invest $1 million. That's something that is lasting technology within the building itself. And so it's important as you're thinking about building out a really technology strategy for all these digital amenities. It's really about that ultra-modern technology stack. So things like cloud-based, right? Eliminating the need for heavy CapEx investment, really shifting purchases to an OpEx model. Privacy, security are absolutely top of mind. I think we're all concerned about, as we come in back to these spaces, there's a camera on every corner, there's a sensor on every wall. What does that mean for me as an individual? Am I being realistically tracked through a space, or is it done in a privacy compliant, anonymous way? And then obviously getting to a point where we're not, again, just buying Cisco boxes or Aruba boxes, things like that, that we're actually buying technology that is flexible, that gives not only the owner operator optionality and flexibility, but allows them to try different things. And that really then leads into the everything as a service. And we've heard from some of the other panelists that are on the buying side of these technologies, that it's really about not sinking costs into a CapEx model, but really buying things that allow you to try different technologies, allow you to try different strategies without being locked into something for 3, 4, 5, or even longer years. Today, again, it's through that tech and health forward experience, but it's really about creating these lasting experiences that, again, if we're competing with the home of just waking up and rolling over, pulling out your laptop and working and having all the creature comforts of home, how do you compete with that? And so you need to make the office a place that people really want to come back to. Of course, there's the desire to connect, to collaborate with fellow humans. And I think we're all missing that quite a bit, especially in CRE, where so much is done sort of face to face and in person. And so, but beyond that, how do you then incentivize if all of these companies are going back to, you know, as we heard earlier, at one point Google and Twitter were saying it's work from home indefinitely, and now it seems to be more like a work from home 3 days a week work from the office 3 days a week and maybe home a couple days a week. And so how do you, you know, sort of incentivize people to say, actually, I want to work in the office 5 days a week or maybe 4 days a week and have that one day of a little bit of optionality? And then again, we're competing with that. So how do you make that experience absolutely amazing? And then it's all the way through the entire life cycle of both the tenant, but then the individual employees that are coming into those spaces. So how do you make them successful? How do you, again, make the office a desirable place to come back to? And so much of that is not only, again, tracking data and using it in meaningful ways, but it's also about democratizing that and pushing that back down to the knowledge workers as well. And I alluded to this a little bit earlier, but I really want to spend a minute or two on this because I think it is so important. How companies are buying technology today is through the lens of SaaS. It really is the X as a service, if you will, as the model for purchasing. It can be both for the owner operator, but also specifically for the enterprise tenants as well, where again, you might want to try different strategies, different technologies, different ways of doing things that will allow you to figure out and adopt for this next normal, and the normal after that, and the normal after that. It's about having technology that is flexible, that gives you optionality, that allows you to change on a dime as needed. And so much of that is really done in a OpEx model, and no longer is it about buying boxes, about buying technology that you end up being quote unquote stuck with for a period of time, and you try to fit different use cases into that versus having a technology that again can adapt and change as you need. And then, so what does this actually look like from the individual user's perspective? So these are people, these buildings exist for workers to come into the office, to be productive, to be collaborative. There really is no other purpose for these buildings than to be a home for creativity, for collaboration, et cetera. And so what does this look like from the user side? It can be about previewing space. So as we've heard about from other panelists, as well as coming into a space, what am I expecting? Is it a full office today? Is it 50% capacity? Am I going to have to battle in the lobby for an elevator ride? Am I going to have to think about where I'm going to go for lunch and it be such an impact in terms of who's actually taking the elevator or how many people are in this space or that space that will drive so much of those decisions? But if I can have some clarity about what I'm walking into, if I can have some clarity about I've scheduled my arrival, I've filled out my health questionnaire, and I know that when I arrive, I'm going to be able to breeze right up into the elevator space. But then also on the owner side, where they've invested so much money and time and effort and energy into these common spaces, how do you make sure that those individual employees also feel safe in those common spaces? I think we're past sort of the part where it's just signage and hyper cleaning, which we only know goes so far. It really is about giving me some sense of how often has this space been used, or how many people are in this space now. And again, it's doing that in a privacy compliant way, so it doesn't say, I know Travis is in this particular conference room, but it's about this space is being used by 5 people, and understanding the context for how that space is being used. Is it just a conversation, or is there work actually happening there? And then things like indoor air quality and all these sensors that both owners and operators, but tenants want to roll out, how do you collect that and not just have it end up being a silo of data? How do you bring all that data together, put in a presentation layer that makes sense for all the various stakeholders, but then, as I've said as ad nauseum, is pushing that down to the individual knowledge workers so that they have that power, if you will, in their hands to be in control of their day. And with that, I'll give it back to you, Pei.
Thank you. So just a quick question on the SaaS model. It's interesting, right, to see that we've got sort of a workplace strategy effort that every company is going through right now. And as we kind of look at, you know, services are being evolved, strategy is being evolved, and then the technology is now to service. So do you think that's a trend in terms of how more and more companies are going to buy the service strategy along with the tech?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned in the presentation, it really is about optionality, flexibility, being able to try different things. We this is our first time going through this, right? This pandemic and what the office looks like as we return, we don't necessarily know. I think, you know, there's some early signals on that, and we're getting some feedback from both customers and individual workers, and even myself as a worker, the things that I care about. But the reality is both owners and operators and tenants need the ability to try different things, try different models, try different solutions, rather than getting stuck down a path that maybe locks them in for some number of years, and it really doesn't ever provide them value or provide any value to the individual users as well. So that SaaS model really does give flexibility, and at the end of the day, does save quite a bit of money as well.
Oh, that's great. And you know, it's clear that there's a lot of exploration and experimentation, and we haven't seen the end of that yet. So
yep, absolutely.
That's great. Well, thank you. Thank you. So next up, we have Michael Lofty from ADB. And before Michael comes on, we do have a quick video. Okay, so Michael is the Senior VP, Head of Smart Building Solutions for ABB. He has 14 years of industry experience in building automation and an incredible track record of great success and growth. He's currently focused on smart building solutions and is responsible for the commercial organization, including sales, marketing, project management, and customer support and experience. Michael?
Thank you, Pei. That was quite an introduction. I hope I live up to that. So thank you, everybody, for being here, and thank you for having me. And from an ABB perspective, or from electrification perspective, I would like to take you through what we are doing and how we see the industry trends in smart buildings and in building automation. I think I'm not able to move it. Can somebody help me then? Because it's not responding to me. Thank you. So we are, since the start of the pandemic and actually before, we have seen quite a tremendous demand on flexible workspaces, mainly due to a lot of challenges in the commercial real estate, from being extremely expensive in some parts of the world, to the growing population in a lot of companies with the booming economies before and after the pandemic, actually, in most of space, especially in the IT world. And we see this demand growing more and more. And our vision is that how we can have an integrated hardware and software to utilize the space most appropriately while improving the well-being and the safety of people working, and also reducing energy and consumption and increasing the sustainability levels in the building. So we basically see a huge demand on room sensors combined with an eco structure or an eco environment based on IoT and data aggregation, helping the entire building to get connected, which enhance your journey inside the building. So for everything from managing the power and distribution that actually empowers the entire building, all the way to utilizing the light and harvesting daylight. Can we move the next slide, please? So on that note, we've created a lot of new innovations in the past 24 months, and we've released a lot of innovations in the last 12 months. And basically, what we're trying to do is really streamline the technology. You hear a lot about this idea for this particular application, whether it's meeting room bookings or elevator utilization or air purification killing COVID-19 and other bacteria and viruses in the air, or energy efficiency platform with people occupancy sensors and so on. But when you look at it from a user experience, real estate developer or facility manager, you see that they basically want something that utilizes and streamline all those fantastic applications in the workspace, whether it's an office, a retail like a mall, a hospital, an airport, or a stadium. You need actually to streamline this and have one platform that combines all those applications and help the people to run the building as efficient as possible, as safe as possible, and of course attract new tenants as companies that will rent office space, or tenants as stores in a mall, or people that are flying via an airport, or people feeling safe to go back and do the very, very important regular checkups that we all have missed during the pandemic. So streamlining this is very important. And what we have done and what we see is an incredible need moving forward is creating this platform where you be the home base for all those innovations, combining them and unifying the user experience and the operator experience from everywhere to utilizing the energy coming the building, harvesting daylight, controlling the HVAC, controlling the air purification system and the climate control, controlling the light control, the meeting room utilizations, and so on and so forth. And with that, can I move to the next slide, please? And here is just to give you a more of how we look at space management and energy management. I think it's became obvious, and you see the trend now with all the countries, not just the United States, but also in Europe, really focusing on sustainability. And all the big corporates, whether it's Amazon, Microsoft, and all the big companies, including our company in ABB, we are committed to a more sustainable future and reducing our carbon footprint. But this also needs to be part of being an energy management company. We always tend, we're always perceived as, okay, so those people will just keep reducing energy consumption, which will come on the well-being and the comfort level in the building. And then actually that's not true. Combining both together, reducing the experience and enhance the customer experience in the building while utilizing the maximum energy efficiency platforms together, this is the ultimate sustainability goal. So you see everywhere that we do or everything that we do after energy management, from calendar interfaces, occupancy, heat maps, counting people, where they at and how many people are in this room or in that room, alarms and trends to either see that the humidity is too high or the light is too low, the ambient light color is actually not good for this time of the day because it will reduce the energy level for the inhabitants in this room. And of course, monitoring temperatures, carbon, CO2 level in the room, and combining all this with optimization algorithms with the energy management cycle and providing performance analytics and data aggregation analytics for the building management system and the building management engineer to provide state-of-the-art experience for our guests in the building and our tenants. Can we move to the next slide, please? So a lot of topics that I talked about, I would like just to highlight two main things. The building ecosystem, which basically is the go-to platform that combines all what I have mentioned earlier, right? It plugs in into asset management systems that manages everything coming from the main switch gear to the sub-distribution, distributing the energy to the different floors and the different equipments in the building, to the server room, to the HVAC room, and so on and so forth. Having all this combined with occupancy sensing, humidity sensing, CO2 sensing, daylight sensing, the daylight quality as well, and the ambient quality of light, and utilization of booking a room, how many people in this room, do I need to call an elevator, and how to call an elevator, and when is the elevator will be ready, and which elevator I would need to go to, and when. Combining this in an all in a platform that we call Building Ecosystem, or BE as we refer to. We see that this is the future of buildings moving forward, especially in a post-COVID environment. Can we move on? We have done numerous state-of-the-art buildings and help big corporates across the world. I mean, we have seen this trend coming everywhere from big cities like in New York and Chicago and San Francisco, in the Bay Area in general with all the tech companies, all the way to big cities outside the United States on a different platform like Dubai, Singapore, Berlin, Zurich, Munich, and so on. And really combining all those different features in one platform helps significantly the property managers and the facility managers to really manage their building to the best and help corporates reach their sustainability level. All this combined helps the real estate developers, whether commercial or the mixed-use real estate developers, to get the best and the fastest ROI on their in their investment in the building. Also help them promote the building as sustainable and caring about its inhabitants and tenants. And I think that's my last slide, and back to you, Pei.
Thank you, Michael. So at the core of every smart building is the data. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, all the data that's generated by sensors and devices? How can the data drive insight, and who owns it?
That's a very good question. So how I will split it in two parts. The first part is how the data help provide a lot of analytics and a lot of insights. So imagine this, you usually have a standard building management system or an older building management system that says, well, we have everybody in the office from 9 till 5 or from 8 till 5. We will put all the lights on during this period. We will put the HVAC at maximum utilization during this period, and that's it, right? While the reality is very different, right? So when you have an algorithm and you have smart sensor in the building, managing really and learning, continuously learning, how many people come during a day, what's the difference between Monday and Friday, when the people come to the building, and which areas usually they utilize the most. Also measuring the different parts of the year and the different times where you have sunny days and not so sunny days. And sunny days mean that I should harvest daylight more, but I also should subsidize more on the HVAC if I have a full glass windows. Utilizing all those this together and in a post-pandemic environment, really utilizing also how many meeting rooms, are the meeting rooms over-occupied? Shall I actually limit the meeting rooms to 4 or 5 people? Mixing all this together provides a lot of insights on first, how to utilize the space better and how to utilize the energy better. Now, from a data perspective and who owns the data, the ultimate data owner in our ABB eyes is the building owner and the facility manager. We don't keep any data with us. We provide them with the insights, but they owe everything. We follow the GDPR rules. As you know, we're a Swiss-based company, so we have very, very, very strict rules about data, sharing data, and utilization of data, and the privacy of the inhabitants of the building and the owners of the building.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So now we've got actually the fun part of the session where we're going to bring everybody back on video. Great. All right. So a fun question for each of you. So you've been working at home for a year now. What personal occupancy metric were you measuring in the last year working from home? Anybody want to jump in? Go ahead, Olivia.
How many times my cat came in and yelled at me that she wasn't getting enough attention?
for me, it was how many times I had to move from the living room to the bedroom to the garage to the outdoors because, yeah, two kids at home and a wife working as well. So.
Yeah, no, personally,
it's like
I don't
know how many times you have to apologize for the dogs barking.
Yes. Yes, lots of pandemic dogs. And for me personally, you know, with five people in the house, you know, counting the number of times you get bumped off Wi-Fi. So. All right. You know, just a little bit of a fun question. So, you know, next question and open to anybody who wants to jump in. And how has the pandemic changed your frame of reference for the industry? And if it's helpful, we could kind of bring that last slide back around the different categories of, you know, what we all manage and the data. So, Ian, I don't know if you have that handy. The slide with the boxes. Yes. Great. All right. So how has any of your frame of reference for the industry changed around each of these boxes?
I think if I could take a stab at it, I think there's sort of twofold. There's the owner-operator side, and then there's the tenant side. I think on the tenant side, there was always an aspect, even pre-pandemic, of giving employees optionality, you know, sort of the work from anywhere a bit approach or meeting employees where they are, especially as some companies were looking to how do we attract the next generation of workers, so the Gen Z workers. And so much of that seemed to be sort of meeting them where they are, building community around these spaces. But I think on the owner-operator side, it was always just viewed as old school, right? I sign a 7-year, 10-year lease with a tenant and I make sure the power stays on, the water stays on, and that's sort of it. But I really do think you are seeing, in some cases for the more progressive owners pre-pandemic, you were seeing this shift, but now you're really seeing this push into, you know, digitizing my building in terms of creating more digital amenities, reasons to be in the office and giving employees a space, if you will, to sort of work throughout the building and investing more in outdoor spaces. And so you really are seeing capital being put to really good use, which is really exciting to see versus just kind of being deer in the headlights and standing back and praying and hoping that people do return.
Yeah, and echoing what Travis said, I think we have, it usually used to be a very difficult pitch to real estate developers and building owners, right? Why do we need to make the building sustainable? And of course, it's different from one part of the world to the other. But in general, it was always a difficult pitch, right? They focus more on the space and the price per square foot. While now you see all the companies and the commercial retail developers is like, how do I attract people back? And I've heard, I think it was you, James, when you mentioned the cultural impact and the behavioral impact of people not coming back to work. So I had numerous discussions with big corporates. Is like, we need the people to get back to work, not necessarily in the old fashioned, but we need this collaborative behavior. We see a lot of conflicts rising now because everything is via screen. And after the screen, I am guilty with that. Sometimes I just want to smash it because I'm getting bored of it, especially during the hype of the pandemic. So we're seeing a lot of requests on how can you help us get people back safely to work. All this combined with, I think now, everybody is appreciating the planet more, and we're in Earth Week now. Really, how can I help my environment, right? And, you know, as a guy that works everywhere from the Middle East to most of my life in Europe and here, is like really how we can become part of the environment around us. How can I help the society, the community, and the environment, right? This building has to be part of a larger ecosystem in the community, and on the state, in the city, and in the town where it is. And those discussions are driving a lot of great ideas and innovations and making our life better. So this is definitely has changed.
That's a great point. And in trying to sort of convince people to come back, I'm wondering if Stuart or Olivia, if you guys want to weigh in on is that a tough thing to do? You know, sort of this last pillar of engagement around hybrid effectiveness, team development and collaboration and community and hospitality, like how are you guys convincing your people to come back?
So, hey, first of all, from our perspective, a touch on optimization, I'd say the pandemic's given us a unique opportunity. With everyone working from home, our real estate sitting empty, optimization has always been a challenge, right? How do you move the puzzle pieces around and restack folks? So we're trying to take advantage of that now. And as we bring people back, we don't have to deal with change management as much, right? A year ago, everyone went home overnight, effectively. Haven't been in an office for over a year. When we bring them back, how do we do it right? How do we do it differently? That's always been our challenge in the past. So what we're working towards now is, as we bring them back, let's change behaviors. Let's have more top-down messaging from corporate about how we want to work and those flexible hybrid workplace. And so we're leveraging that as we move back to the office. It is really a unique opportunity to have all your real estate empty. And so we want to take advantage of that.
That's great. Olivia?
Yeah. Our challenges will be different, I think, depending on when we do this. We are not back. We are still in lockdown despite my current locale. So, you know, if we're doing this as kids are still homeschooling, like, hey, you've got three, it sounds like, on some kind of remote learning, that's a different challenge than if we do it in the summertime. And that's a different challenge again than if we do it in the fall, and the fall kids are back in school, or there's daycares are open. And so it's very, very, very dependent. It's very personal how it impacts people and staff. And so we're trying to be very mindful of that in our decisions and our communications, and it will of course all be voluntary. We're very cognizant that it's the people that we miss the most, and so we are looking to try to support the meetings and the social part of our day, and the value, recognizing, you know, one thing I think has changed this year, recognizing the importance of that in culture, and space in general has had a renaissance. You know, more and more people are thinking about it where they didn't before, and we are sitting on the forefront of the conversation about how we do this safely. So I think that's also helped. From somebody who's in architecture and facilities, it's nice to see, you know, we're not the core business, we're not economists, but we're now kind of essential, and that's a nice change too. It means we can have more conversations about pushing the envelope.
Absolutely. And it's it only took a pandemic to have a seat at the table at the C-suite level, huh, for the industry. No, that's great. And so I guess perhaps, you know, from left to right, I've got Travis on the left, and maybe we'll just kind of make our way through. You know, as you kind of think about this conversation, what would you leave, you know, the one thing leave, you know, with this discussion? That is either an advice or something that's a thought for consideration. We'll start with Travis.
Yeah, thank you, Pei. And thanks again to all the both panelists and attendees. I really do appreciate you guys taking the time out of your day. I think from my standpoint, the one thing I'd like to leave behind is really investing in technology that is lasting. I think more so than anything, yes, we're absolutely steadfast and focused on bringing people back and bringing people back safely. But it's got to be technology that's going to be here well into the future and adaptable for whatever the next normal is.
That's great. James?
Yeah, I mean, I would build on what Travis has said. I think there's a big short-term focus on this and the urgent need to get people back to work. But the need for that technology, the need for this understanding of space and utilization is so much longer lasting than that. And I think the pandemic has been a forcing function to make people recognize it and to move that understanding from like, hey, that would be really nice to have so that we can provide better space and be more efficient and, you know, give people a better work-life balance in our space. The pandemic has made people recognize like this absolutely has to happen. And it isn't just for the next 6 months, 8 months, however long it takes to get beyond this, it's going to be a change in mindset that lasts, you know, moving forward. And so the data that where you've been talking about today is a new table stake for moving forward.
Yeah, and lots of fundamental assumptions being re-looked at, right, as part of this process. That's great. Michael, the one thing you would leave us with?
Really emphasizing on that the building has to work together in a holistic manner, right? Everything from the power consumption to the incoming power. This is really gonna become more and more of a trend with all the states and the country in general driving more sustainable approach. And like all my the panelists have mentioned, really focusing on the well-being, the tenant experience, all this with energy and sustainability combined is gonna become the mega trend for commercial real estate moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, Olivia.
For me, I think the sustainability piece of this, I mean, that is a global pressing issue. It is something that has been profoundly changed by our actions, and we can see the impact that we have on this. And for me, I think that to continue to drive towards sustainability goals, we now know it does not have to come at a cost to corporate productivity. And so to not lose sight of that as we try to clamber back and figure out what new normal is, it's just a much bigger cause than that needs to be continually on the front of mind.
Absolutely, yeah. And even in the middle of the pandemic where folks are still tracking, you know, the rate of infection, there's been a number of announcements by major corporate C-suite around, you know, carbon net zero and commitment, right? So definitely top of mind. Brian?
Yeah, so I think I was gonna mention that just the opportunity that exists now. And I think when we all shifted from work from office to work from home as employees, and we're all in that together. And I think from a landlord perspective, it's a unique time because the landlord themselves is occupying space, leasing out space, and they're faced with the same challenges as their tenants. And really, I think adapting to tenant need, to employee need, how space is going to be occupied, and really viewing it as an opportunity for transformation in commercial real estate, I think is very interesting. And so I look at it as a very potentially positive move and a move forward that is going to cause transformation.
Thank you. All right. And last but not least, Stuart.
Yeah, I would second a lot of what Brian said. I think it's really an opportunity for transformation. With the pandemic and folks working remotely for a year, I think it's really changed how we think about work behaviors. It's changed perceptions amongst leadership, individuals throughout the spectrum. So how do we leverage that, right? And as we move back to the workplace, how do we think about it differently? Both how we work, how we collaborate in this hybrid in-office remote model, as well as how do we use our space differently, right? Rethink the traditional office layout. So I think it's, you know, behooves us in the CRE industry to really focus on that. And as we plan for return to office, how do we want to do it differently?
Thank you. And with that, Ian or Nancy, are there any questions in the chats?
I submitted one earlier. I don't think you had a chance to review. Let's see.
I can see it.
Stuart had mentioned amenity being amenity heavy. What unique amenities have they added, or are they seeing to attract employees to the office?
Yeah, sure. And I dropped that in the chat, but I think organizers only. So one of the things we do that's unique is we have this what we call connection space, branded connection space. And really, it's a full floor in our newer buildings. We take a full floor, make it open to everyone in the market, every employee. And it's a mix of large meeting and event space, as well as casual drop-in space, touchdown space. You can come from another building, work for the day. We co-locate it with food, services, amenities like game rooms, etc. So really it's to foster bringing teams together or folks together from different buildings, different floors, people you don't normally interact with on your work floor and provide that space that's easily accessible. So that's one example. And then same time, we're pushing food services, digital experience through the work floors, right? How do we up level to kind of micro markets on markets with a greater variety of food and beverage options on the actual workspace, so you can grab something to eat and keep working in the workspace, or head downstairs to the connections workspace, take a break, get out of your work floor, get out of your day-to-day space.
Very good.
All right.
And okay, with that, I believe we're out of time, unfortunately. Seems like we could go on for another 30 minutes. Any final thoughts, Pei?
No, I'm good. A great conversation. Thank you all so much for contributing your perspectives, and look forward to keeping track of new trends as we go. I'm sure there will be future opportunities to share more.
Well, thank you for moderating today's session, and thanks to all our panelists for participating. It was great. Thank you for sharing your insight and suggestions about the new hybrid workplace. Now, before we sign off, I'd like to take just a minute to mention a few events we have coming up in the next week. First, tune in tomorrow for our weekly news show, RealCom Live. This week, we'll be talking about cyber in buildings with our guest, Ryan Albaugh, real estate tech and innovation strategist at Wells Fargo, and Sean Milan, VP of Cyber and Info Security at Brookfield Properties. They'll be discussing how their organizations are guarding against cyber attacks and the precautions companies of all sizes should take to protect themselves. And then next Thursday, we'll be presenting part one of our enterprise tech series focused on next-gen leasing. You can register on our website or by using the link I just posted in the chat window on the right. That's it for today. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you. Take care.